Welcome to the Space Show, Kerry.
Hello, Andrew. Nice to be here again.
Medical research has been very prominent in the spaceflight activities. Has Australia been involved in any way in these activities?
Well, yes, as a matter of fact, although most people would think it pretty odd for Australians to be involved. But we've had one very significant medical experiment flown on the shuttle. And it was, in fact, Australia's first shuttle-flown experiment. This was first proposed back in about 1978 or 79 by Dr. Leo Dintenfass, who was a professor of medicine at the Sydney University and also attached to the Rachel Forster Hospital here in Sydney. He was a rheologist, a specialist in blood flow. And he proposed this particular type of experiment, which would study the reaction of healthy and diseased bloods under weightless conditions to see if there was any difference in the blood flow between healthy blood and diseased blood, because this might give a clue to, finding ways of cures for the for blood problems. So he virtually single-handedly firstly convinced the university to allow him to pursue this project, and then went out and found the sponsorship and the technical assistance and support to actually develop the apparatus and to get it over to the United States and fly it on the shuttle. He actually went out to find a commercial sponsor. He had a lot of difficulty, as a matter of fact, getting support through the normal research grant channels. He did get some research grants, but not sufficient to enable him to actually travel to the United States himself with the device to take it to Kennedy for launch on the shuttle. And there was a real estate company in Sydney called Jones Lang Wootton. I don't know if you have them in Victoria or not, but they were doing an advertising campaign at the time, which had a nice picture of the Earth rising over the moon, and a caption that said, "We put more people in space than the Americans and Russians combined." So Leo Dintenfass had the idea that he would go to this company, and he said, "You're using a space theme to advertise. How would you like to put some money behind a real space program?" And they did. And so they, in fact, supported his first flight on the shuttle. They paid for him and his team to go over to Kennedy to process the aggregation of red cells experiment, as it was called, and then to stay there to see the launch in that.
I believe that some of the patients had to go there as well.
Yes, that's right, and they had to pay their own way too, apparently, because it was necessary to have the samples of the healthy bloods, at least as fresh as possible, so that the various volunteers who were providing the control samples and the flight samples, went over to the United States to be on hand so that their blood could be drawn at the appropriate moment.
Did those particular shots go off on schedule, or did they have to stick around for a couple of weeks or months while they waited for the shuttle to be sort of prepared and got ready?
I think they went off pretty well to schedule. The ARC's first flight was actually on board one of the classified military missions. I think it was the first military mission, but certainly one of the classified ones, and it was the only civilian experiment on board that mission, which shows that NASA certainly had a commitment to that particular experiment, that they were anxious to get it up as soon as possible.
Why were the Americans so interested in it?
Because of its medical potential to assist in finding cures for things like leukemia, various types of blood disorders. There was a potential in this research, and there still is the potential in this research to assist in finding cures for these and possibly other diseases of the blood.
So after that first mission, Dr. Dintenfass came back here to Australia, continued his research.
Yes, and NASA was in fact so impressed with the results of the first mission that they offered him the chance for a second flight. In fact, it would have been within about 12 or 18 months of the first flight, had it of course not been for the Challenger accident. But NASA was so keen to fly it again that they offered him a spot on the STS-26, the first flight after the return from the Challenger.
That's pretty amazing, because everyone was clamouring to get it back into space at that time, weren't they?
Yes, that's right.
A big queue of experiments, and he got first in the queue.
Yes, he was, first cab off the rank. And again, the sad part is, of course, that he was pretty well largely forced to go out and find all his own funding. I believe that with that second flight, NASA did, you know, waive various charges and things to enable it to go ahead. But Professor Dintenfass still had to find a lot of his own funding for that.
And after that mission in 1988, what happened to the project out then?
Well, again, the results from the second flight, which of course was necessary to corroborate the results of the first flight, were showing such good, you know, comparison of the two and such interesting information coming from them, that NASA was offering Dr. Dintenfass a third flight. And things were actually in train to fly the equipment another time. And unfortunately, Dr. Dintenfass very tragically passed away in 1990, very suddenly. And he left no one to carry on his work. There was no one interested in following up with his work, so that it just sort of stopped at that point.
So what happened to the laboratory?
The laboratory at the Rachel Forster Hospital has recently been, I won't say demolished because that's not the word, but, you know, disassembled, if you like. The hospital now needs the space for other research, and so the equipment and so forth has been disseminated to other projects. The actual aggregation of red cells apparatus itself, which includes the slit capillary photoviscometer, which was the main instrument, and actually the instrument was designed by Dr. Dintenfass himself. He was also trained in physics and engineering, and so he did this, you know, actually designed this thing himself with help from Hawker de Havilland and CSIRO. That apparatus and the cameras that were actually used with it on board the space shuttle have been donated to the Powerhouse Museum.
So we can expect to see it there soon, can we?
Well, I hope so. I'd like to have it on display in October this year. That's my current hope. Something special for the International Space Year and, of course, the 25th anniversary of the launch of our own first satellite, which is coming up this November.
Something then that Australia can truly be proud of.
Yes, very much so.
Well, let's hope that this display brings Dr. Dintenfass's work to greater public attention than it has received so far.
Yes, because regrettably it's had very little attention in the public media, although it is well known in the medical press.
Well, thanks for joining us tonight on The Space Show, Kerry.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks a lot for having me.